stance. The dice roll every random chance. Take off your coat and stay a while. We'll roll in that D percentile.
What's cooler than a ninja? Nothing. What's cooler than a call-in episode? A call-in episode with a whole load of calls about ninjas.
Dave, Conrad Kinch of Zen 3 and Fourpence here. I'm a bit concerned that you haven't raised the inverse ninja cube law, which is an integral part of the depiction of ninjas in popular culture, and of course reality. The ninja-ridden reality in which we all live. But where one ninja appears, he is generally very threatening, totally awesome, and, a god amongst men. However, where many ninjas appear, they are often quite easily dispatched and are a less threatening foe than one ninja on his own, which would lead us to believe that there is simply a set amount of awesome which must be divided amongst the number of ninjas present in any given situation.
Conrad, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate the call in. And I was with you right up to the point where you said there was a set amount of awesome that needs to be divided up between all the ninjas. Because, I mean, if there's a set amount of awesome, then there's a set amount of awesome. So it seems to me if that one ninja embodies that set amount of awesome, it is a particular level of challenge. And then if many ninjas embody that set amount of awesome, they should nevertheless provide the same level of challenge to their foe. Or did I get that wrong, maybe?
David, I'm shocked that you would suggest such a thing. The inverse ninja rule means that each individual ninja is less effective than the single ninja because of the division of awesomeness. But, of course, those ninjas remain gentlemen and will therefore only attack the heroes, one each at a time, and are therefore easier to deal with rather than one sort of super-powered ninja in one go. Imagine, if you will, a man attempting to eat a steak. If he picks up the whole thing and attempts to cram it in his mouth, he's going to have a fairly bad time of it. But, imagine he picks up a knife and fork and then cuts the steak into smaller pieces. In that way, the steak is significantly easier to eat and your ninjas are significantly easier to beat. Good luck. God bless. Keep up the good work.
Well put, Conrad. Can't argue with that. I yield, sir. But I think I agree with you. It's important to get these things straight about the ninja-ridden reality in which we all, of course, live.
Hey Dave, Jason here. Just enjoyed your latest ninja episode. You mentioned the Remington Street Sweeper, whatever it was, and from Shadowrun. You know, the funny thing is, you can buy those now in the States, obviously, definitely not in England, but here in the States, they, due to a loophole in the definitions of the, you know, the way firearms are, you can actually buy something that's basically that. The one you have the Elf Decker holding there on the cover of Shadowrun. So you can actually buy those things. I mean, they're not very good. They're not good for much. They've been used in some crimes over here, some high-profile crimes. But aside from that, you know, you're not going to duck hunt with them, but you can get them. I suppose that's no different than Star Trek predating medical devices and cell phones and all that, and Cyberpunk 2020 and Shadowrun correctly predicting some things and getting other things horribly wrong as far as technology goes. But, you know, it's interesting. You know, the thing that I always find interesting, you look in older games, you know, especially space games or futuristic games, and the way they do computers in there, they just had no idea how quickly computers would advance, which, you know, is understandable. You know, you win some, you lose some, but very interesting. But not nearly as interesting as ninjas. And I think Jeff hit it, that inverse proportion. One ninja by himself is unbeatable. Look at Ninja 3, The Domination. One of my favorite ninja movies. You know, where a ninja goes, he takes out a whole squad LAPD, finally gets shot up. He possesses the body of a a solid gold dancer. Well, she's not a solid gold dancer in the movie, but she's a solid gold dancer in real life. And anyway, and then she becomes the ninja. He has her going out killing people and stuff, but it takes another ninja to take him out. So you have that solo ninja that's unbeatable. And then, and that's a great movie. If people haven't seen Ninja 3 The Domination, you need to check that out. But then you go to the hand and the foot, and where you have the masses of ninjas as just faceless bad guys. So I think Jeff of Tomb of All Dooms really nailed it. Good job.
Yeah, thanks, Jason. And you're right. It's probably the Foot Clan that my kids are thinking of when they think of those hordes of easily beatable ninjas, of course, from Ninja Turtles. Yeah, probably don't have to look much harder than that. Thanks for all this, Jason. That's probably one of my most fun ever call-ins. We had the whole range. we had weapon porn. We had, gun porn. We had ninja B movies. We had the whole lot. Absolutely love it. And then a little egg? Little Easter egg you dropped in there. I'm not going to go duck hunting with them. Certainly got me thinking. I'm sure it's just an everyday expression, but it did get me thinking about ducks. Have they done that with RuneQuest? I thought of Googling this, but I'm going to leave it to my listeners. Have they shadow-runned RuneQuest? Has there been a game of the science fiction future of the RuneQuest world? Be interested to know that. Often, at least a fan will have done something like that, but it did just get me thinking about Shadowrun or Cyberpunk with ducks. Yeah, there's an idea forming there, definitely. Kind of Ed the Duck science fiction. Oh, I said Ed the Duck. I meant Howard the Duck. Ed the Duck was a puppet who used to live in the cloakroom on kids' TV in Britain when I was a kid. But I'm thinking of Howard the Duck, kind of Howard the Duck. I know that stuff's out there. But a Howard the Duck Shadowrun mashup, that could be fun. Anyway, I'm sure these things already exist. I look forward to hearing about them. Cheers very much again, Jason. Oh, listening back, don't know what's wrong with me today, UK listeners, broom cupboard. I know it's a broom cupboard. Why did I say cloakroom? Ed the Duck lived in the broom cupboard.
Hey Dave, it's Mignon. Just listening to What's Cooler Than a Ninja? Nothing. And I was thinking about colour, the use of colour for ninjas. So in the movies, you usually get the ninja dressed in black, but occasionally there'll be this mystic ninja who dresses in white and yet still vanishes, you know. And I thought that was always kind of cool, and we actually had a player play a white clad ninja when we did our take on Oriental Adventures. But it's interesting because here in Japan, ninjas usually are sort of depicted wearing blue, like the samurai blue or a peasant blue. And I wonder why. I think looking back historically, you don't want to talk about this, but I'll mention it anyway. There were certain colors were only permitted to certain people. So typically, the brighter the colors, the higher up in the social higher up the social ladder. And interestingly enough, the samurai would have had a duller color because. Ostensibly, they were one of the lower classes, even though they were actually in power from time of Tokugawa or even before that. Anyway, colors and also pink ninjas if they're women in the modern cartoons. But this is Japan, right? Blue and pink. Ghibli has a very interesting depiction of the ninja in Mononoke Hime, which is I think. That's simply translated as Princess Mononoke. What do you think of those? All right, talk to you later. Bye-bye. Finally, I think it was quite funny listening to you at the beginning of the show waxing lyrical about the Remington room sweepers and bloody sawn-off shotguns and so on and ninjas. And really, it sounded like a conversation you might have had or we might have had when we were 12 or 13. That was a lot of fun. It was only until later that I realised that I had the speed up on 1.5, so it was even more manic But there you go. Cheers, man. Bye-bye.
Hey, thanks, Menion. I enjoyed that call-in. Yeah, yeah. So I was going for something with that intro, and I was really pleased. I mentioned a couple of episodes ago, I think I actually achieved it. Finally, after a year of podcasting, something sounded how I meant it to sound, and it probably did sound even better sped up. I wish I thought of that, actually. I could have sped it up myself, couldn't it? Couldn't I then put it out? I'm glad you enjoyed that. And yeah, on Mystic Ninjas, Ninja Colours, I loved the idea of colourful ninjas. I think I read in one rule book somewhere there was a ninja costume that you could get, or a stealth costume. I don't know if it was specifically ninja themed, but it was obviously black for night travel on one side, and you could turn it the other way round and it was white for winter stealth. And I remember thinking that was an amazing idea. on historical detail. I mean, you know, I love a bit of historical detail. I think so. I should amend those earlier comments. I think a game can absolutely be improved by a bit of relevant historical cultural detail. I just don't think it's. I don't think a game necessarily needs it. You know, if you're going for something cinematic or mythic or legendary, it doesn't necessarily need it. And I do also think that if that's what you want, those sort of low crunch, high fluff RPG source books are not necessarily the best place to go. I don't necessarily always rate them for scholarship. Maybe that's unfair, but I did appreciate the call in, Menion. Cheers.
Hey, Dave, it's Vance. Hey, just wanted to thank you again for those wonderful Black Axe sessions you were running for us. I probably had more fun gaming in those than I have for quite some time, mostly because of the very entertaining mishaps that my characters kept getting themselves into. And so, yeah, looking forward to seeing which new milieu that you come up with. Hopefully I can step in on a game or two. And, yeah, of course, I've got a ninja class in my batch of homebrew Black Hat classes, because who wouldn't? Take care, man. Bye.
Hey, Vance. Thanks for the kind words and the Black Hat. We'll be back. And, hey, the ninja has got me into the Black Hack WAC classes. So this is by Vance Atkins. You can find it on DriveThruRPG, and it is pay what you want, so you have no excuse not to. And in this, you can find, specifically for Black Hack 2nd Edition, the Alchemist, the Bard, the Monk. It's got a Monk as well, the Ninja, the Plague Doctor. We had very good fun. Vance played his Plague Doctor in our Black Hack campaign. The Ranger, the Tiefling, and the Warlock. Some highlights. We've got a whole page of detail of Alchemist potions. So you've basically got a whole additional magic system in here. The Alchemy Kit, the Alchemist. Well, it just costs. So the Alchemist has great flexibility amongst their potions, but it costs them to make them. So that's a different kind of resource management. Interesting different magic system. The Bard, of course, has musical performance, which will support allies. The Monk, yeah, the Monk's got some cool things. So obviously the Monk has got martial arts, cat-like reflexes, and can choose one secret skill, one martial arts discipline, some of which give them talents a bit like some of the other classes, and there are some interesting other benefits they can get. Yes, the ninja has a killing blow, and is very good at creeping around and defending. Like that a lot. The plague doctor can heal, but my favorite ability of the plague doctor is killing rats in the dark, rolling with advantage when fighting vermin, and rolling panic tests with advantage, which is very, very, very useful because they can be fatal. Got the ranger there, the tiefling. What's the tiefling got? Or demonic curse. Roll with disadvantage on charisma attribute tests for NPC reactions and parlay. But that is balanced by the demonic gift. Spells based on charisma. Fantastic. And then the warlock has got a whole bunch of cantrips. So that's a less costly form of magic. So there you go. It's pay what you want. You can do no wrong. And thanks very much, Vance, for the call-in. Beautifully laid out as well. Very sympathetic to the Black Hacks design. Really attractive document. All right, so we got a few messages now from the Lonely Adventurer. This one goes on a bit of a journey. There is quite a bit here. I'm going to play them all in a row and I'm going to warn you. Strong views are expressed. Thanks very much for these.
Dave, Lonely Adventurer, oh my God. Palladium, Super Spy, Ninjas and Super Spies, are you kidding me? My childhood, I think I had all the Palladium books. It is the worst system ever written, with some of the lamest art. The Kevin Long stuff, everyone just looks like some dead soulless, like those maquettes from the Thunderbirds. His anatomy's all off. Ugh, terrible. And yet I loved it. And I have a super soft spot in my heart for all the garbage they've pumped out over the years. There is a podcast called The Mega Dumbcast that does a page-by-page, 5-minute podcast at a time read-through of Super Spies and Ninjas and Super Spies, and then moves on to Villains and Vigilantes, I think, and does a couple other books. And definitely worth a read. Oh, gosh, I'm running out of time. I think the thing that is just the greatest, and from a professionalism point of view, the worst part about every single Palladium book that Kevin Symbieta was involved in is that he just writes stream of consciousness and puts it on the page. And once it's on the page, you can never go back and change it. You can't edit it. You can't take lines out. And then he spends massive amounts of real estate in the book explaining to you why things couldn't be put into the book or why they did this or that and then didn't have room for this other section. And it never occurred to him that if he took out his weird rambling whatever they were from the books, that there would have been plenty of room for those things he left out. He was like Gary Gygax on crack, and he's still out there making role-play books. And it's amazing. What a beautiful world we live in. So, yeah, I got to close now. I get very excited about Palladium. It's something I love talking about because it's so weird. But I cannot recommend enough the podcast about The Mega Dumbcast. It is so good. I think he's in his third season now on Beyond the Supernatural. But the Ninjas and Super Spies, I think, was the first season. And it is just, it's insane. And I love it. And I think you can download. He does 5 minutes a day. 5 or 6 days a week, and then he compiled them into big megasodes on Sundays, although he may have removed those because I think that's like a Patreon thing now. But yeah, absolutely delightful podcast. Definitely check it out. I think you'll really like it if you are a Palladium fan. He is also, but he also recognizes the quality issues in it, and it's a beautiful podcast. Definitely listen to it. Okay, final Ninjas and Super Spy message, probably. So I went to bed last night thinking about Kevin Long's artwork, and I woke up thinking about it this morning. And because there was something about it that was just extremely engaging as a child, but now as an adult and someone who just happens to be a professional illustrator, like, I look at it and see everything that's wrong with it. But I still find it strangely engaging because he's got really, really strong structure to everything he draws. Like, it feels very, you can kind of get a sense of the mass and the volume. And yet the anatomy is always way off, and the faces and expressions are always extremely stiff and wooden. And I have a pet theory. I think maybe he was using one of those 12-inch G.I. Joe action figures as like an artist's mannequin in his work. Because that's all I see when I look at them now. But I don't know. Probably not important. Probably haven't solved any major RPG mysteries here. But just got to get that thought out of my head. Yeah. At the same time, though, what I think really works about Kevin Long is that he's got a very specific style, a very specific artist voice in everything he does. So, like, you always knew whose art you were looking at when you saw his pieces. And it wasn't always the same for other folks contributing. And I think his style went a long way. It's weird because his stuff is very restrained and simple, and everything Palladium is so gonzo and over the top. And the two things made such strange bedfellows that, I don't know, it just works somehow. So I don't want to rag on the man too much. His art did a lot to help my engagement with all those Palladium products when I was a kid, and certainly broke up the walls of rambling text and tables and charts and all of that.
Hi, Dave. Lonely Adventurer. So you mentioned in one of your recent Ninja episodes, which I'm all caught up on, that you had done a Palladium episode at some point in the past, and you'd thrown down the gauntlet and no one had picked it up. So I went rooting through your archives looking for that. I found episode 60 of season 1. You're just talking about the RPG a day, I think it was, and the love, only talking about positive things about Palladium. And I absolutely loved it. I agree with everything, like all that stuff you mentioned, if you recall it, this was a while ago, but just like the crazy concepts, the plethora of engaging art, just all of it. The kitchen sink approach to gaming and riffs, just all absolutely delightful and definitely captured my young teenage imagination and did not let it go for a very long time. But I did notice in talking about only positive aspects of Palladium games, not once did you really talk about how playable they are. The skill system, I didn't recognize it at the time as a kid, but having kind of revisited some of them as an adult, it seems like the old school D&D thief skills on a massive scale, where most things you start off being pretty bad at and you stay pretty bad at them for a very long time. And level progression was so slow if you played the rules as written. Kevin himself talks about having a game that went on for many years and only his characters had only gotten to, his group had only gotten to like level 6 or 7 or something like that after years of playing. But he was also of the mindset that, you know, an average role-playing group was 11 to 16 people. Like the games he describes are just bananas, much like his books. I do want to once again recommend the Mega Dumbcast to you, because every time I think I should do an episode about Palladium and all those books, especially Riffs and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle stuff and the Robotech stuff, every time I think I have something to say, I realize that Mega Dumbcast has done it better with much better humor than I could. It's a podcast that is, each episode is 5 minutes long. He identifies the dumbest thing on each page from a design point of view. And that sounds extremely negative, but he is doing it from the position of someone who just deeply loved these books as a kid and still has a great fondness for them, but recognizes the many and deep flaws that it has mechanically. Highly recommend checking it out. His very first season, I think I may have said this already, is Ninjas and Super Spies. And then, oh, about to let it run out of time. In his second season, I believe he moves on to Heroes Unlimited, wherein we discover that magic powers are okay, superpowers are okay, but in every single Palladium book, guns are the way to go. Guns will always destroy any superpower, mutation, psychic powers, or whatever. It is very much an adult teenage boy writing his daydreams into a book. So when he Palladium copy pastes a lot of materials from book to book, making a lot of them unnecessary to buy, really. And so any time in his second season that Mega Dumbcast comes across repeated material, he then goes to Transdimensional Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, rolls a random page, and instead of finding the dumbest thing on the page, identifies the most wonderful thing on the page, because there's a lot of great stuff in those Ninja Turtle books. So yeah, I really, really hope you check it out, and I'd love to hear your thoughts if you do. Have a good one. Lonely Adventurer out.
Oh, brilliant. What can I say? I don't think I want to argue with any of that. I couldn't disagree with much that you said there. I've maybe got a little bit more affection specifically for Kevin Long's art than you have, but you got no quibbles from me about Palladium as an absolutely unplayable system mechanically. I mean, there's loads more I could say about the bizarre way that Kevin Ciambiada has curated all of that stuff. I actually think Eric Wojcik did a slightly better job with the ones that he wrote, but the whole thing, the whole bizarre empire, yeah, yeah, you got it all. As for Mega Dumbcast, yes, I have checked it out, and, you know, what can I say? It's brilliant. I just I feel an incredible resentment that you can have a multi-season podcast on such a premise. You know, what we're going to do, we're just going to read bits of read bits of Palladium books and dissect them. It's brilliant. I'm just jealous. I mean, I started off with a concept. I was going to do random tables. I couldn't even manage that. Yeah, so Mega Dumbcast, it is a riot. It is recommended. And I've got to get over my sour grapes. Cheers for the call-in. And that's your lot. Some of my best call-ins there, I think, since the days of Ducks and Hobbits and Tom Bombadil. I reckon ninjas really bring it out of people. So I'm going to say thanks again for the call-ins to Conrad Kinch, to Jason Connolly, to Menion, to Vance Atkins, and to The Lonely Adventure in particular for that epic contribution. I really appreciate the call-ins. Keep them coming, and I will catch you all soon. Keep well.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to contact Dave, please leave a message on Anchor, email dpercentile@gmail.com, or find him on Twitter at d_percentile.
Hi Dave, it's Lonely Adventure. It's been a while since I called into the show, and I've noticed I haven't heard anything about the 47 voicemails I left regarding Palladium Games, and I wanted to thank you for that. I was not in my right mind. Summer setting in here in Virginia. I think maybe I had a bit of heat stroke, and it's just as well that those never see the light of day. So I really appreciate you not playing them. Thank you. And what's this? Episode 178, call-ins. Oh dear. Oh my.